Hello, everybody, and welcome back to That Milan Podcast. Somber times here, but we're going to keep it upbeat and positive, as you guys all know very well, of what happened on Monday night with the Derby della Madonnina. We'll get into that very soon, but quickly, we just want to say thank you all for the support. Mm-hmm. Subscribe, like, comment, subscribe to the podcast on Apple and Spotify and wherever else you get your podcasts. Matt, finally putting a cap and a damper on one of the more disgusting finishes to a season in Milan history. So let's kind of try and unpack this. Obviously, the elimination from Europa League and then heading into the Derby, where all Inter needed was a win to get their 20th Scudetto. We knew it was coming anyways, but it's just really adding and summarizing and epitomizes adding an insult to injury. And this is what it was. Inter win the Scudetto, 2-1 victory. Acerbi scoring the header within 20 minutes. I think it was the 18th minute for Inter. Milan once again conceding within the first 25 minutes against them. Sixth straight derby loss. Your thoughts heading into this, because we'll get into that lineup selection and everything, but just the overall gravity of what this loss is. This isn't just another derby loss. This is an all-timer and a historical one for Inter, where they will always hang this over our heads.
Grim. It's grim times. I mean, I think, you know, look, there's levels to it. You know, the Banter era kind of created this sort of, you know, numbness when bad things happen. We're like, ah, it's the Banter era. We've been through everything with this club, right? But when you come so far and we won the title a couple of years ago and we had such high ambitions to, you know, win more trophies and to make deeper runs in the Champions League and to just be more of a consistent threat. I think that's kind of the problem here, right? Is that we had moments where we looked really sharp and, you know, we had moments where, you know, we were playing at a very high level. And then we have moments where you're scratching your head and you're like, is this the same team? Are these the same players that were largely, you know, impactful in the Scudetto season? And the answer to that is yes. And there's a lot of players to be held accountable. It's not just the coach, which obviously we're going to talk about and we have talked about at length in previous episodes. But the just kind of focusing more so on the game here, I didn't have any good feelings, good vibes heading into this one. And I think it's more so down to the recent results. I mean, you know, I think it was pretty evident that, you know, Pioli started to run out of ideas, but we started getting some very good results, right? At least, you know, results-wise, we were there and people still had their doubts, but we were hoping that, hey, look, whatever the case may be with Pioli, let's see what we could do in the Europa League. Let's see if we could spoil Inter's Scudetto party and not have it come against us, right? Those were kind of the last two things that Milan fans were latching onto as motivation, right? Of course, fizzle out in the Europa League. We talked about that. Go check out the episode. And then we get to this match where, like, immediately, right? Like, immediately we didn't have good expectations. And then in the buildup, you see the projected lineup and you're like, what is he doing?
Which this is, I mean, you're right. What is he doing here?
What is he doing?
There is, and I tweeted this, and I'm not sure if you saw this one or if other people saw this, but my point was, and I've said this multiple times too, he is a very reactive manager. Yeah. He is not a proactive manager. So with this lineup selection, right, in the past two spring Serie A derbies, what do we see, Matt? And it comes off of the back of conceding multiple goals to Sassuolo. 8 goals in the past two spring matches against Sassuolo. They dropped 5 at San Siro last year. We conceded 3 to them in a 3-3 draw. Absolutely despicable, a terrible Sassuolo, right? And again, it was another indicator of what was to come in Europa League. This was a mental lapse. This is someone who does not have control of the locker room. This is someone who doesn't understand positionally what his players are best at. He is putting a player up top in Rafael Leao, who has said multiple times he's far more comfortable out wide, in a position as a number 9 where his strengths are not finishing, and you're expecting him to be a player that he is not. You're putting players in a position that you want them to perform when they're not capable of that. Nor have you ever even tinkered with that in matches to at least have a basis to go off of or some chemistry. There's players like Chukwueze who are not getting starts that are in terrific form. Once again, proving Pioli's demise with Milan that he is not rewarding the right players and putting them in a position to succeed. And it's ultimately what cost him his job, and he's not officially out yet, but all the reports are telling you this. And in the most important part of the season, in which you mentioned that you could have some semblance of restoration of this project or Pioli's tenure with the club, where, okay, you can get to a Europa League semifinal where it is acceptable, actually, to lose to a Leverkusen, who have yet to lose a game, but masked by the 3-3 draw, masked by the fact that you look terrible in both legs in Europa League, undisciplined through large parts throughout the season, and then this lineup selection, pure garbage. This was a disservice to his own players. And and we'll get into how poor the players were, right? But this alone is setting your own self up for failure and your players. And to add insult to injury, you're just gifting Inter the title. You're literally telling them, yeah, go for it, I guess, right? Because Inter, from what I saw, could have scored like 4 or 5 goals this game, Matt. Just the lineup selection in itself was just the ultimate indicator that they looked like they were just conceding this game. This wasn't even like, yeah, we're going to play behind the ball. I don't even know what this was. This was just so disrespectful to every fan. I just think that this was, so I'd rather have him just went with the same lineup he's been going with and just lose that way. Because this was just even like, you're admitting you have no idea what's going on. Because this is just stupid. This is just indefensible lineup. And you could take it from here. Because I
want to go back a couple games, right? Because I think that there was, again, to my previous comment regarding, despite, you know, a lot of uncertainty around Pioli and everything like that, we're a couple weeks removed from people in their reports saying Pioli might stay. Pioli might get another year. So things can quickly change, and you can kind of get a sense of how close he is to being on the hot seat at that moment, where it was like one slip up, he might be gone. That's the decision, right? Yeah. That's the nail in the coffin. But a couple weeks ago, even before the Sassuolo game, we had a feeling. We talked about it. The pulse and feeling was Pioli might stay on another year. He might have done enough to stay on, barring again a massive meltdown towards the back end of the season in the Europa League, in the Derby. If he steadied the ship and we did, to your point, make it to a semifinal and bowed out admirably against a Leverkusen, and we put up a good fight against Inter and we finished second, Pioli might have kept his job. Yeah. He might have truly kept his job at that point because the results, we were playing pretty well for most of 2024. We were sitting there in second. Juventus were free falling. No one was even close. It was just Inter was going to win. We have a stranglehold on second, and we could do some decent stuff in the Europa League. Quickly, how things have fallen apart for Pioli, and it's his own doing. I know the players have accountability, but in the Sassuolo game, we talked about it. What was going into this decision with some of his player selections in that game? So you don't play Tijani Reinders in that game, but you play Rafa the full 90. Then you bring guys on to go and chase that game to finish level draw at 3-3.
You start Kier, who has not been good whatsoever.
Then what do you do? So you rest Tijani Reinders. Everyone's thinking, well, he's resting him because he's going to play in the Roma game. That's obvious. He benches Tijani Reinders, who's probably the most informed midfielder at that moment, and it goes absolutely south. That game is dreadful. We lose that one, right?
Up a man for 60 or so minutes.
And then he continues. Then he continues to sort of grasp at straws. He's panicking. He's like, I need something. So he changes the lineups again. The personnel gets changed again. In match day 33, 34, in mid to late April, going into May, you should have a stronghold on what works, what doesn't work, what is your true preferred 11 heading into the stretch run in the most crucial games of the season. You should know this. With the exception of injuries, we have our guys back. Tomori's back. You have Taylor back. You have Magnon. Our midfielders, the attack. What's the excuse? Early in the season, there was the excuse of, well, we have injuries. You know, it's a makeshift defense. The midfield is banged up. The attackers are not in good form, so he's sort of trying to see what works. Then the final nail in the coffin, this is the final one, is starting Rafa as a striker, your best player as a striker. Musa, who I want to reiterate, and I've had said this many times, I do like, and I think he does need more time. And he's shown flashes. He's been in and out of the starting 11. He's played a lot of games. He's come off the bench and played only 10, 15 minutes.
Talk about where he played him in two straight games. Where he played him in two straight games.
Right. Then you go into this game, you play him, and everyone's scratching their head like, why? Just to go back, Chukwueze finally gets into good form, finally, after clawing his way into the starting 11 and getting good result, good performances, having the two goals taken away against Sassuolo. How does Pioli reward him? He doesn't even play him. He plays him in the Roma game until the game's done and dusted at that point.
Both legs.
So not only is he very unsure of himself when it comes to selections and his identity and setup for certain games, but he's also choosing the wrong players and he's not rewarding the right players when they should be rewarded. And that comes down to man management. Because if you're Chukwueze, you're thinking, man, I clawed my way to get into good form. I clawed my way to make a difference at this part of the season. And I'm on the bench again. Like I'm demoted again, right? So that's what is very discouraging and annoying for me as a fan. Because if he would have went into this game, Pioli, he says, you know what? I'm going all out. I'm going Rafa, Pulisic, Chukwueze, Giroud. I'm going Adli, Bennacer, or Rafa off his cheek. And then he puts his normal back four and Magnon. People would have been, you know what? Fair play to him because he's playing his best attackers. Exactly. He's playing his most informed midfielders. And he's playing best back line he has available to him. When you're unsure of yourself as a coach and you don't feel truly confident in what you're putting out there, that transmits down to the players. There's a downstream effect on that. If you're a pilot and you're not sure that you can land the plane and you're on edge, the passengers are going to be like in panic mode. It says a lot where Pioli, who may not have completely lost everyone in the locker room, but if you're unsure of yourself, then the players are going to be looking around like Rafa's like, I don't like playing a nine. I've played left wing my entire career here, pretty much. And now you're choosing the Derby to put me as
isolated.
He doesn't like playing there. Like, what isolated. Are you doing?
Isolated.
What is he doing?
Truthfully, not even a second striker. He played second striker at Lille. At least try that. Have Giroud play off of him or
He's not a pure nine. So you put him as a pure nine, and everyone and their mother was like, oh, this ain't gonna work. And sure enough, it doesn't work. And everyone's like, How do the armchair analysts and the Twitter finger users see this? And you, the professional who has won a title, you have a tangible evidence that you can do good things and choose the right players and put them in positions to succeed.
Yeah.
And this is the decision. This is the decision you come to in a derby. And it doesn't work out. Nobody's surprised. Like, truthfully, like, that felt like the end of the season to me. I know the Sempre Milan guys, Ali, you know, Torgru, Maddie, I listened to their episode and I wanted to get their thoughts on it. And they were like, what are we getting up for? Like the Inter game was like the last thing for us to be like, we know they're going to win, but man, let's make it difficult for them. And you completely lay down to your rival and they embarrass you. That's terrible.
It's
the players too. Calabria
Let's get on to this. Yeah. So like, again, how many times have we seen Inter score this goal? In the 1-0 victory last year in spring, who was unmarked? Right? The best striker in the league, next to Osimhen. Completely unmarked. Scores. Here, we have a 30-something-year-old defender who's on his last legs, completely unmarked. Yacine Adli's in no man's land. And this is, again, you know, this has to do with the manager, but this is more so on the players, right?
Yes.
Because I've said this multiple times. There's things that you blame the manager for, where it goes with style, position, tactical ideas. And then when it comes down to fundamentals, you blame the players. This is fundamentally hot garbage. Horrible. This is inexcusable where and Ali mentioned this too when I edited and posted the clip on Sempre Milan, so go and check this out. And it was pretty funny because he was talking about Mancini, right? And three of the four goals, or three of the goals recently that have been scored have been Mancini completely unmarked in a corner at San Siro, and then Mancini yet again, where he does a great job on Bennacer, where he completely embarrasses everyone. It's like you didn't even expect the guy to be marked. And then Acerbi, again, completely alone here. I don't know if it's zonal marking. I don't know what they're told. Put it this way. When you're told fundamentally, and Ali says the same thing, and I completely agree with this, you're told to pick a man and stick with him like you're glue, okay? And there is nobody, even within a millimeter of these players, to try and mark them. That, to me, is just a failure on all fronts. And the fact that people want to pick and choose the blame there, there is no picking and choosing here. That's everybody. That's every single person. From Rafael Leão up to Davide Calabria to Stefano Pioli to his staff and everybody involved. This was garbage. You're talking about a stretch where nobody in the history of the club has lost six straight derbies. And that's what they're going to be known for, this team, okay? The past 2 years. The accomplishment of the Scudetto is far gone. That's in the distant past. So anybody trying to hold on to that, we talk about that, you know, when we give our praise and admiration to Pioli when he finally leaves, you know, in the reflection on his era, that's something you highlight, sure. But now I don't give a shit. I don't care about that. We're talking about 2 years removed now. We're talking about a fifth place finish last year within Serie A that we were fortunate enough to get into the top four and in the Champions League because of the fact that Juve got knocked out. We're talking about a third place finish into the group, and then you go into Europa League, and then you do terrible in Europa League, and then you do this. And by the way, the Europa League run is not as pretty as everyone likes to make it out to be. Rennes and Slavia Prague, there were some terrible games in there. They lost to Rennes. Yeah. So to me, when we're sitting here looking at this, there's a mentality change. And when we were talking about managers and we're not really going to highlight it that much and potential like changes here, the first thing I said, and I talked to you and Torgrud about this, if I'm sitting there saying to myself, what is the perfect manager here? Is it about tactics or is it now about mentality? Because I sure as hell question the mentality of quite a few people. And we'll get into that because there was red cards involved with this and it was a complete implosion. But for this, and then even the Thuram goal as well, because I want to get into that one. What is Davide Calabria doing on the Thuram goal? Can anybody like tell me in the comments section what that guy is doing? Who looks like he's scared shitless to even challenge Thuram. Tomori's put out on an island. Thuram has all this confidence in the world, right? Like, for me, when you're playing right, it goes week to week on your mentality. When you're up so many points and you're playing the season of your life and you know Milan are weak at the back, Thuram is going for it. He is not scared for a second, right? If this is like a three-point gap within the title and the game's 1-0. Does Thuram still take the same opportunity and chance? Probably not, but we have our star goalkeeper who we like to revere as one of the five best in the world getting beaten near post yet again, a right back who is considered the captain to once again not even challenge and step up, looking like he's scared, arms behind the back. What are you doing? What is happening? This is so despicable, and it's indefensible because, you know, like sometimes when you go back and forth with fans and you defend your club and all that, Milan haven't even given their fans anything to defend. Anything Interisti say and other fans from other fan bases that are looking and watching this, there's nothing to say back. Everybody is right. There is nothing to contest. Yeah. This is pathetic, and it's met with six straight derby defeats, Matt. Like, that is embarrassing. So talk about Acerbi up until Thuram's goal and what everybody knew was the nail in the coffin of a Scudetto loss and Inter getting their second star before Milan does.
This game was a snapshot. Like, if you wanted to get a feeling of what Milan's season was,
yeah,
it's this game, right? I mean, lapse of judgment, fundamentals on a very, very repetitive, very simple thing in nature, and man marking on a corner. And I know Inter have pretty sizable central defenders, and they have good target men. They've always had it with Dzeko and Skriniar. They had always had guys aerially who can beat us, right? And that's always been an issue for us, which is why we've kind of always hoped that Malik Chow would kind of emerge and be one of those, like, you know, negating factors in that, right? But this isn't even he's just bigger. He's bigger than a Bennacer. He's bigger than an Edgar. Yeah. This is just fundamentals. And when you're not, I mentioned the last couple episodes, the details, just the details. It doesn't take, look what Bologna do. Look what good teams do. It's doing,
smack Roma, by the way.
It's doing the simple things perfect. And execution of the same thing, discipline, right? It doesn't take a Rabona, a spin, a roulette around a player. It's fundamentals, marking and sticking your guy on a set piece. Free header, you're down. I was like, I'm not surprised. Why am I surprised? Why am I shocked? Right? And then it's the second goal, Calabria. The guy who is on social media and the captain, we're not gonna lose the title and the derby. You're that frame right there. Oh yeah, that's meme material right there. And Inter fans in the comments on Twitter, you have every right. You have every right. You were the best team this year, and you smoked us for the sixth straight derby. What is it? 14 goals conceded, 2 scored for Milan.
I have it on the bottom here.
Right.
They've scored 11 goals.
11 goals. 11 goals.
And we right? scored. We've conceded yeah. 11, scored 2. Within the 6. Right?
And I look at this and I'm thinking to myself, man, like, if you're an Inter fan, you're absolutely loving this. If I'm in their side, I'm like thinking, like, whew, Milan are free falling. Their coach is going to get fired. Hakan's getting his title. Man, they're loving it right now. And credit to them. They were the better team. They weren't particularly dominant. This wasn't a flawless performance by
they've
them.
Been like,
Milan
they've
had
been
a couple
like,
things happen late in the game where they were, you know, Milan were chasing the game. They got the Tomori goal. They did some things decent in certain spots of the game in the second half. But it's always been the case with Pioli. It's always been, oh, now he puts Chukwueze on. And Chukwueze now makes an impact. Where were you? Why are you waiting until the 65th, 70th minute to then bring on the guy that should have started the game? Like, it's mind-boggling. But Inter, yeah. the way that team is drilled, you can see it with Simone Inzaghi.
Oh, it's a managerial difference.
You take one guy out. You take a wing back out. You take a Dumfries out. You put in an Augusto or you put in a Darmian. And that same sort of mentality, that same sort of assignment is stuck. They deliver. They have the bench. They have the depth. They have the discipline. And at the end of the game, with the red cards, with Teo and Calabria, don't confuse stupidity with toughness and your grit. Because, they weren't going to take this. So now he gets a red card and he gets sent off. And that's supposed to be some sort of message to the fans and everyone watching the game who's a Milan supporter. Like, oh, well, he went out there. He wasn't going to just take it. You look like a jackass. You got beat on the Turan goal. You are consistently criticized because you're not a great right back. You're the captain of this club. And you're just, frankly, not up to that quality and that standard. He has to go. He's another thing. He's a captain. Who is representing this team? Even when Calabria was captain in the Scudetto year, everyone and their mother knew Abraham.
I mean, it was Roman.
Everyone knew that. And for all the shit that people wanted to give Ibrahimovic, oh, he's signing on for another year. Why don't he just retire? When he left, look how that locker room changed. Look how people – he was the voice. He was the heartbeat of that team. He wouldn't have allowed this to happen on his watch. If we would have lost, we wouldn't have lost in this manner.
It's reflective. It's reflected in – the derby performances.
Yes.
For the past 10 to 15 years, Inter has substantially been the better team in the derbies. Yes. They've been winning derbies. The times in which Milan were winning the derbies were when they were both crap in the banter era. There was some back and forth there, but it was really largely garbage, right? And even then, Inter still were winning. Then obviously Inter ahead in their projects, destroying Milan. It didn't take until Milan and Ibra came back where they lost 2-4. They scored two goals up on them immediately, and then Lukaku and them, they came back and they won. Yeah. That was the last year Juve won the title. And then the very next year, obviously, Inter outplayed them. They eliminate them. Even in the year of the Scudetto, people forget Coppa Italia, what happened? We got embarrassed in Coppa Italia over two legs. Yeah. People forget that. They destroyed us in that. And then again, the types of victories, right? Because they're not just Serie A derbies, Matt. We're talking about Supercoppa, having an opportunity to win a trophy, a Champions yep. League semifinal. They're done and dusted. They're not even competitive in them, right? Because there's so many times in which people are like, oh, this is a derby. Anything can happen. No, this isn't. This might as well be the Torino derby at this point between Juve and Torino themselves, where it's just one team who always wins. And if the other team gets a result, people are shocked. Is that supposed to happen to 19-time Scudetto winners? Are you fucking kidding me? Like, seriously? That's what it comes down to? Like, Inter aren't even scared. They're not even like, oh, we have to prepare ourselves. This might be a difficult match. They don't even view it like that.
It's gotten to the point,
do you realize how bad that has fallen?
It's gotten to the point where, you know, people troll and be like, oh, I don't know, I think Milan can actually get a draw from this. Like, Inter fans. And people are like, stop it. Like, basically trolling their own team and saying, like, you're not fooling me, the Shaq meme. I'm familiar with your game. Like, basically that. It's like, don't bullshit me. We know you're going to win. You know you feel like you're going to win. Yeah. But you're not going to say it because of jinxing and all that stuff. That's the feeling. And whoever the coach may be next, beyond just, you know, the personnel and the signings and management and all these sorts of things, you have to be able to restore some semblance of mentality and toughness to not be consistently the doormat for your rival. That's a great measuring stick, because in previous years when both Inter and Milan were in the cellar and they were not good teams and the derbies, I was there in 2016 when Milan won 3-0 and it was Mihailovic and whoever their coach at Inter was at that point. And I'm like, both those teams weren't good. But now it's not only just a rival, but it's a measuring stick. If you can't even at least put forth a good performance and put a good foot forward against your rival, it shows that you're just completely head and shoulders not equipped to win a title. You can beat the Lecce's and you can scrap against a Sassuolo and whatever the case may be. That's a measuring stick. That's a measuring stick on your mentality, on the project, the strength of the team, the character, a bunch of different things. And the fact that you could lose six straight times to your rival, at some point you can't keep getting kicked in the teeth and your coach can't keep his job. I'm sorry. It's one game. No, people say, it's one game. You have 37 other ones or 36 other ones. I'm sorry. But his big game record is dreadful. It's dreadful. And people have used this too. And this is my one little thing from the game. People have said, because I've mentioned, you know, Conte, and it's like, oh, but, you know, Conte doesn't have a good Champions League record. Does Pioli?
Yeah, that's exactly what I said in my thread. Like, did Pioli had a track record prior to this?
The first year, we got a tough group. We finished last. The second year, we made a run. Fine. We got absolutely embarrassed by our rival over two games. And this year, we finished third, and we couldn't get out of the group when we should have. And we had, by all accounts, a pretty embarrassing run in the Europa League. Let's call it like it is. I don't care that we made it to the quarterfinal.
Europa League final.
Right. So, like, I'm sorry, but his big game record is not good. And for you to hang that over his head like, oh, well, Conte's not a good Champions League record. He's a winner domestically. Domestically. Let's, before we can think about Champions
League. Exactly what I said in my thread.
Before we can think about Champions League. What about domestically?
Yeah, thank you. This is exactly what I was saying. And it's not even just like Conte, like we have to get him and he's the only option. That's not the point. But when the point of contention against Antonio Conte is that he's not that great in the Champions League, this guy isn't. This guy barely qualified for the Champions League. It took him until he got to Milan to get into the Champions League. Listen, is Conte annoying to an extent? Absolutely. Does he come up short in European competitions? Absolutely. But does the guy overachieve and dominate domestically? Yes. Why can't Milan start with that? Do we want to talk about Milan's domestic record, by the way, in the 21st century in terms of titles won? Matt, they're not even fucking close to Juve or Inter. Okay? So we talk about an Inter four-peat. Then they don't win for a while. They've won two since then, right? So since Inter's treble, so we won't count Inter's treble, Milan and Inter have had two Scudetti each, okay? But if we want to go back to the 21st century, Inter have six, Milan have three, so they have twice the amount, right? And then if we want to count Juve's, Juve won nine straight. So we're not even talking about the ones that they won earlier in the decade as well, in the century as well. So the number's probably closer to four times the amount that Milan had. Are we kidding? What do we even have to say to these people? We are talking about three league titles for AC Milan with the teams that we had in the 2010s. In the 2000s. The awful teams in the 2010s. And now we're almost halfway through this decade at this point. And we have one title there. We're talking about one title per decade for supposedly one of the biggest clubs in the world, in which they talk about brand. Where is this? I want to see it. I don't know what people are talking about when they're talking about Champions League. The goal every year should be to win the Champions League and every trophy possible, right? Yeah. Make no mistake about that. But can we start with domestic? Coppa Italia, Matt, how many times has Milan won it in 30 years? Can you tell me? Do you know how many? You know the answer. They've won it one time. Okay, so when they have all these trophy counts, right, and this is about pride, this is about brand, this is about bragging rights. When Inter, sure, major trophies, when it comes down to it, we're still very close, and we have the superiority with that, right? They have one more league title. We have infinitely more Champions Leagues. And I'm talking about the major, major trophies, the biggest of the big trophies, okay? But then we get down to actual trophies in total. We're not even close. We're not even close with Coppa Italia. We're not, and I don't care what fans are saying when, oh, we don't care about this. We were embarrassing in Coppa Italia. You think Conte goes out to Atalanta like that, where it's undisciplined, Timo Koopmeiners is bagging penalties? They're not even competitive in that, too. Like, seriously, like, uncompetitive in that sort of competition, where, again, you virtually have not much to play for. You have to focus on that competition. Antonio Conte, for all his negatives, right? And then we could talk about other managers too. Thiago Motta knocks out Inter. What's Thiago Motta's excuse? He knocks out Inter in the Champions League. The Coppa Italia. He knocks out Roma 3-1 after they're riding high in a victory. Fantastic form. No one has beaten this Roma like this in 2024 after Mourinho left, besides Inter. What's the excuses here? This guy wasn't good enough. Antonio Conte is a massive upgrade on him, and I love Pioli, and I appreciate everything he's done. And I'm not saying I only want Conte and only him, but there is a staunch difference. This guy, for all his faults, wouldn't do half the shit that Pioli did. And not even talking about defense, Matt. This defense is, the past 2 years, one of the worst Milan defenses. And some of the games in which Milan drop points and lose, you think Conte is subbing on Yunus Musa against Lecce as a right back in a 2-0 game? You think he's doing that? You think he's conceding three goals to a Sassuolo side like this? And again, we talk about it. It's a 2-point difference there. Okay? So if Milan win that game against Sassuolo, Inter actually don't even do this, where they win the title against us, because they drew to Cagliari. So where is Milan in all these other matches and where the mentality drops? They're conceding, they're blowing leads, like the game against Napoli as well. How many times did we talk about this? I don't care about the injury record. I've seen Conte, okay, improve so many players and teams. He won a Scudetto with Alessandro Matri as his striker. Mirko Vucinic. Like, I'm sure there's a ton of Milan fans listening who have no fucking clue who these guys are. And rightfully so, because he took these guys to another level that nobody could even imagine. And they're accepting this. Conte would be a huge upgrade, and you guys wouldn't even fucking know it until you saw it happen. And that's the sad part, because that's where the standards have dropped even within the own fan base.
And look at the standard, too, that Inter have set. Inzaghi's been there. I mean, people like to talk about, you know, well, we won the title over them. And look at the years. And I watched Kush's his recent video, and he made a great point about Inter. He's like, the project's further along, and they've been the best team of the past half decade. Like, let's call it like it is. I mean, look at the last year that Juventus won the title. Inter were what, 1 point off? Then Inter won one, right? Napoli won, but even towards the back, the last 15 to 20 games, Inter surged and they were in great form and they made a semifinal, a final.
Yeah, they just had a terrible first half, yeah.
Right? And that's when Inzaghi was like,
and one of the Super Coppa and Coppa Italia as well.
Coppa Italia. But what's the one thing or two things that they've always been, regardless of that, at least winning or in the final pretty much every single year?
Correct.
Look at the Super Copas and the Coppa Italias for Simone Inzaghi.
He's the best
people like manager. People like to diminish those things. People like to say it's only the Champions League or it's only the Scudetto.
Sure.
Fact of the matter is, I think people would be singing a different tune about Pioli if he's maybe been able to grab a Super Cup or a Coppa Italia to add to his mantle. And people can have said, hey, but like, he's a decent cup manager.
Yeah.
He knows how to balance and juggle the schedule. So he knows how to rotate and prepare his guys to get up for a big cup match, right? Because people like to look and diminish and look down on some of these cups. Me, personally, if it's a trophy to be won, I want to fucking win. Yep. Excuse my language. I want to win it.
You don't have to excuse it.
If you're a true Milan fan, do we have too many trophies where we don't Super Cup? I don't want a Super Cup. Coppa, who cares? But then when you lose it, you use it against the team. I can't believe we didn't win the Super Cup. I can't believe we didn't do this. We let Atalanta beat us in the Coppa. It's a trophy.
Forget how much people love 2016.
Look at Atalanta. They have a semifinal today. Look at Juve. Allegri, he's gone. He's all but gone, just like Pioli. They somehow scratch and claw to get a goal late in the 83rd minute yesterday.
Perfect way to describe
and for
it.
All that, they can still find themselves coming away with a trophy in such a miserable season. Can you believe that? Are we too good enough? We're big, mighty Milan. We're too good? We're too good for a Super Cup? We're too good to win a Coppa Italia to give our fans
after Inter got eliminated, Milan were the best team. Easily, and they didn't even like come close to showing.
Look how much we rejoiced in 2016 or 2017 when Pasalic won that when he made that penalty. I want to win trophies. That's a great measure of where you are as a project. That's a great measure of the squad quality, and that's a great measure of how good you are as a club. Trophies, Super Cup matters to me. Coppa Italia matters to me. They're games. If they matter to your rivals, they should matter to you. Period.
You think Real Madrid accepts this? You think Barcelona accepts this? Bayern Munich?
You think Real Madrid are punting on a Copa del Rey and they don't care about it? It's trophies. It's prestige. It's winning mentality. Winning culture. Teams with a winning culture want to win those. They might rotate and they might prioritize certain things maybe over them, but they're not saying, nah, who cares about the Copa? Who cares? The FA Cups. You think Manchester City is going to say, nah, we don't want to beat United in the final. We don't care about this. We have the league we care about mostly. They want to slaughter Man United in that final.
They will.
They want to slaughter. And if Man United have any resolve and any character, they won't lay down like a doormat like Milan did to Inter.
Oh, they're going to, though.
But they're going to.
They're going
and they
to.
Have a whole other slew of problems themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on.
It's standards, and it's, I think, people like looking towards a different – viewpoint when they lose Coppa Italia, where they're like, oh, well, I don't want to win it anyways. We could win Europa League. Well, look what happened. They couldn't even be competitive and go deep runs, right? Like, so say they get to a final of Coppa Italia, for example, and they get to that semifinal in Europa League. There are certain things that you could digest and stomach. You could be like, okay, yeah, it happened. What are you going to do about it? Unfortunate, right? Where you're basically looking at it and finding it acceptable. Like, the fact that people didn't care about the Atalanta Coppa Italia, shame on you guys. I'm not trying to tell you how to be a fan, but if you didn't give a shit, you didn't get upset about that, that's sad. Because then that just shows your standards.
When you start rationalizing failure and losses, that's when it's bad. The Coppa, we don't really need the Coppa.
Yes, you do. You need it.
That's bad. That's bad. That's mentality. That's mentality. That's a lack of mentality, period. When you start rationalizing losses as being acceptable and failure being as acceptable, but we would have lost to Bayer Leverkusen anyway. We weren't equipped to win this competition.
We sure? What was Karabag almost eliminated Leverkusen? What's the excuse? There's so many excuses for it.
Yeah.
And we could get at Jerry. We could get at management for the way they approach things and their quote unquote lack of ambition. The fact is this. This team actually had enough to win Coppa Italia. They had enough to at least get to the semifinals. It's not so much about beating Inter and winning the Scudetto over them. It's about where you're able to succeed. And if you don't succeed in those areas, that's a massive failure. Losing to a great Inter, and I understand Frank Crivello of Serie A sit down. I think he's fair and rational with certain things, with what he's saying. He's like, when he comes to say Inter are historical, Milan weren't going to beat them, I could at least accept that. I think there's certain things where the gap should have been a lot closer, and the performances within the derby need to be screamed at and get frustrated with. But there's also certain things of third place in a Champions League group stage where both of those teams are now in the semifinals and we were clearly better than them and we didn't do a good enough job. Frustrating. Coppa Italia, where we should have knocked out an Atalanta, who, by the way, who we could not even hold a mantle to in almost every single time we played them this season. I think we only drew them. They beat us in the first game. They knocked us out of Coppa Italia. They're also eliminating Liverpool, who are competing for a Premier League title. Easily, yes. Thank you for saying that. Where, by the way, Charles de Ketelaere and Gianluca Scamacca, two players that could have succeeded within Milan, or at least Milan could have bought Scamacca to put themselves even further. They still knock out a Liverpool who were finally on their way to turning it around after a lull, after a year or two. CDK has a phenomenal assist at Anfield. At Anfield, this guy is succeeding. This is a reflection of the manager, the standards in which that have fallen off. And Ali makes this great point as well, and even our good friend Muja as well. Why do you need to be motivated for these certain types of games? Isn't it enough? Isn't it enough to put on these colors and also play for a trophy? Is it not enough? What do you need? Then this is where I actually kind of side with Pioli. Why does Pioli need to motivate you for this? Yeah. Pioli shouldn't have to motivate you. What Pioli should do is get the fucking lineup right. Okay, excuse my language with that too. And if anybody from the club or anyone else is watching and stuff like that, I mean, no disrespect by this. There's standards to be set and to abide by. Milan don't have them. So we'll move on for that unless you have a final point regarding this. No. I don't think you do. We have a lot of suspensions now. I believe it's Tomori, Theo Hernandez, and Davide Calabria will be missing this game against Juventus, which is on noon Saturday, Eastern Standard Time. Filippo Terracciano, does he have to star in Prison Break to get some minutes? Because I don't know where he's been. This is a must start for him. I guess Florenzi on the left or Filippo on the left. These guys have to start at fullback. It should be Florenzi and him. Over these final games, and we'll talk about the Youth League team, and then we'll get to your questions to wrap this up. For me, I think when it comes down to these final matches, I want to see players. Jimenez won't be playing because he's out for the rest of the year, by the way. So with that, I want to see Terracciano get minutes. I would like to see Kevin Zeroli get some minutes. I would like to see Chukwueze start more often. I would like to see Okafor and Jovic start and play more often. And then again, with that, Giancarlo Simic, I think it's just the final point I would say of a player that I think deserves more minutes and an opportunity here. Milan still need to obviously finish within the top five spots. They're so far ahead of Roma. They really just need to get a couple wins. I am sure they will do that. The likelihood of it happening against Juventus, probably unlikely. But once this game finishes against Juve, the rest of the season is easier for Milan. Matt, who do you want to see play in these games?
You pretty much hit them all on the head. I mean, I think
Terracciano. Amarda as well, sorry.
We got him in January, and there was talks of Miranda from Betis, and we got Terracciano pretty cheaply from Verona, who has Serie A experience. We're not talking about a guy we just got from some random Italian team in the third division, and now we're clamoring for him to get minutes. When we get a player in January from a team that plays in Serie A with us, you expect him to at least get some burn, unless he's injured, unless he's just not up for it and he's not up to fitness. Let him play. Like, let's see what we have here. But Pioli's never been the greatest at rewarding players, right? I mean, look how long it took him to get Adli in the squad, right? So that's a whole other conversation. So I want to see him play. Simic, absolutely, because I think at some point You want to know what you have in him. He's very young. I like the, from what I've been seeing with the youth league games and him at the, in the youth level for Milan, he's got a lot of good leadership quality. He seems like one of those, you know, no nonsense type of defenders that can lead a line into hopefully down the future. So you want to see him get some key minutes down the stretch here. And Zaroli being another one. I know he just signed a new deal. So those are probably some of the,
love that kid.
Some of the couple players that I think deserve some opportunity here. I think the Inter game is tricky because, again, I think it's from an optics thing too as well, where we have a three-fourths of our entire back line or starting back line out for this game, Calabria, Teo, and Tomori. So it's going to be very much makeshift as it probably has been at any point this season. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to completely get battered by your next
I don't even know if that's possible because they're embarrassing, but I think you
would. But at the same time, like, they have some young players that I do like, and they have some attackers that I think could cause trouble for us, regardless of whether or not...
I like Cambiasso. Cambiasso.
Right, like, they still have some good players in their team, and we concede against some of the worst teams. We defend poorly against some of the bad teams. So yep. I think Juventus are fully capable of, you know, causing this makeshift defense some issues. So maybe not this game, again, depending on how the game progresses. I want to at least, like, have some sort of pride. I don't want to get hammered by not only the Interisti, but also the Juventini for getting two back-to-back embarrassing defeats. So hopefully we can show something in this game.
Not even talking about
it. I don't know. I don't feel good about it. But, yeah, I think after this point, you know, I don't have the schedule in front of me, but it's pretty light. Like, the games are
They face Genoa after Juve. I'll have to pick up the rest of the schedule. But
They have two wins this year. Two. They drew us earlier in the year. I'm pretty sure we have Salernitana, right? We have them one game.
I gotta pull it up, brother, real quick, because it's just my whole thing is So the fixtures are Juve, Genoa, Cagliari, Torino, Salernitana. And that's it. Yeah, Salernitana is on the final match day.
Yeah.
Listen, there's a couple relegation sites here. The final match day is on the 26th.
Pioli, like, do something. Salvage something in the last portion of the season and give some of these young players an opportunity to at least throw on the Milan shirt and to play for this club.
And talking about the young players – congratulations to the youth squad on a great youth league run once again. They got to the final. Really disappointing for them. I know how hard they worked just to get there. And it's pretty – it's sad in a sense because the youth league and the system of the team is changing, right, with the U23 side. And we discussed that with Tom Bogert. So go and check out that video on the channel if you haven't already. A lot of these guys are ready for the professional side of things. Whether they go to Serie C or they stay with Milan, the guys of like Kevin Zaroli, we'll see about Filippo Scotti, Sia, Camarta. I think he'll be staying there mostly for next year as well, but I'm sure he'll get some minutes coming up. Giancarlo Simic, who I think is a professional, we'll see where he's able to play next year. But this was a great run. It's a disappointing end, but this also highlights on how many strides, on a positive note, that Milan have made in certain areas of the club.
Yeah.
I think this is something to be lauded about. You know, finals could be tricky. Olympiacos had a lot going for them, so kudos to them. Congratulations to them as well. But for Milan, unfortunately, it's a little bitter, but, you know, semifinal last year, final this year, it's still pretty impressive and more than likely that they're going to be playing in the Champions League next year as well, because Milan are likely to make it back into the Champions League. Final comments on that before we get to the questions.
Yeah. Big congratulations to the youth team. I mean, Abate's done a great job. Obviously, you know, people have been calling for Pioli to lose his job so Abate can get a couple games here. We don't know what the future
Nobody's
is.
Even Abate,
but right. I think at the end of the day, I think that Abate's shown a lot of promise as a coach. I mean, it's never easy to come back to the club that you played most of your career with and have an impact as a coach. We know how difficult and how much pressure can be put on you. We saw Seedorf, we saw Inzaghi. Former players don't always do so well going to their former club to coach. And I know this is the youth level, but to get to a youth league final and to have a really good run, and not only that, show that you can develop young players. It's very important. I think that, you know, we're focusing so much, and nowadays we focus so much on the players signed for the first team and how much we're spending and our net spend and all that stuff. But if we can somehow usher along some first team players that can make a real impact in the next couple of years, that's major. I mean, we got Kamara to make his debut this year. You know, I know it was a couple minutes. Giancarlo Simic had some key moments.
Pirolli, you know, Partizagi got some minutes earlier.
Like, we have guys in our youth sector that I envision playing a role in the future. So I'm hoping that we can kind of still, you know, nurture them and get them in the right positions where maybe next year under a different coach, you know, a few of them crack into the you know, the lower part of the depth chart, and we have them making strides forward. So big ups to them. It's, again, if you want to find any silver lining in the season, is that we have come a long way with our youth team, which did take a beating over the past years. I mean, there was points in time where our youth team wasn't that strong. And we
horrible. Really they got relegated just a couple years.
Players weren't moving through the system. There wasn't any real big hope in some of the players that were on our youth team.
It was like Cutrone and like a couple.
And he was young and he left. Like Donnarumma. Like there wasn't many names.
There wasn't much to go off.
Yeah. So let's hope we can kind of keep growing in that regard.
We'll see if Hugo Cuenca's of the world will get any poll or minutes. I think there's something to be had. And again, I think the positive point is having those homegrown talents that you have to meet the requirements to play within Serie A and all these things. You could offload and by the way, we forgot to mention Traore and Daniel Maldini or two others who were on the youth side last year. And then Colombo as well. So even then, worst case, there's some profit to be had. There's something that you can gain off of that because some of these players are just strictly not Milan level or they're not ready to be Milan level. And that's okay. Yeah, you're still producing professional players that are getting minutes. Brescianini is another one. He's gotten minutes with Frosinone. There is some talent out there. We even forgot to mention Locatelli. That's funny. With that
Cutrone,
kind of stuff.
You mentioned Cutrone. Looks like Como is getting promoted. Looks like they could get promoted. And he's got 13 goals and 4 assists for Como. I know it's Serie B, but to see him maybe come back to Serie A is, you know, encouraging.
Can't wait to drop points against him. Moving on to your questions, because Matt wanted to add this to the show. I'll just pull up a question right now. We have Ryan Zaki. He asks, question for the pod. Inter is starting a winning cycle. Well, it's continued. Do you see us realistically winning a Scudetto with this management in the next 5 years? I'll go in quickly to say 5 years is a very long time. A lot can change. Pepe Marotta is likely to be out in 2027. We'll see a change of ownership potentially with Inter. I think Inter are going to win the title next year. Let me say that and be very clear about it. But, you know, 5 years is a long time. I think Milan definitely have the capability and a foundation. If they do things right this coming summer, they can do it. I will be positive in that sense. What say you?
Yeah, I mean, I think also, too, the landscape of the league has shifted quite a bit since the days of Juventus having a monopoly on it. I mean, 9 straight titles, no one was really contesting them with the exception of those couple years where it was like Roma and Napoli kind of pushed them a little bit, but Juventus were head and shoulders the best teams those years, and they really weren't contested by any of the Milanese sides. But you've seen it, right? Like, we've seen Juventus, we've seen Napoli, we've seen Inter, we've seen Milan, and we've seen Inter. So, like, we've seen some parity within this league amongst the top teams.
Yeah.
Contesting year to year. So if you're Milan and you're a Milan fan, your expectation should be that we're looking around. We're seeing Napoli. Like, Napoli makes a big jump, right? We see that Inter are winning titles. We see that Inter are making deep runs in the Champions League. We see Juventus are going to come back. They're going to have this whole new youth revolution where they got a lot of young players and they're going to have a new coach.
They don't sell them, man.
That should motivate you. That should motivate you. Be like, we have a lot of competition. Like, if we're looking around and seeing our rivals are making strides forward and they're getting the right coaches in there, the right players, they're doing the right things on the market, they're becoming more sustainable, spending more smartly, that has to signal something in Milan brass to go this summer, not next summer, enough with the sustainability. Why are we
we're not going to do anything stupid to bankrupt ourselves.
But why are we doing – yeah, why would we do – What's the aim if you're going to be striving for such sustainability to not reap the benefits of being so sustainable? Yeah. You could be mildly aggressive on the market.
You got to take some risks
without being stupid. Right.
Yeah. It's called calculated risk.
Right.
And I think, like, you know, like the perfect example is the guy who scored against us in the Derby is Marcus Thuram. What if they give him $500,000 to $1 million more? What's the difference? Does Inter win the title? Probably not. Things could go differently. I know Thuram plays great off of a striker. Yeah. It's a little different. Yeah. But the point is, it's like calculated risk. And I think people just highlight things where it's like a CDK, for example, where you only have around $50 million in your budget and you're not willing to sell players. You're getting a largely unproven top five league player in CDK where you're spending $35 million of that. And then you don't have a manager that fits with that. I think there's certain things and guys that you pay more for because they can produce that for you and push you closer to the achievements that you want to reach. And I think that comes with calculated risks and more proven stars. And it sounds like they're going with more proven players this coming summer instead of, you know, the simple, like, we're turning over so many different things.
Yeah.
I wouldn't expect a massive wage bill just yet. But even Roma, for example, they take risks too. Dybala is a risk. Lukaku is a risk. There are certain other players that they take. They were very hit and miss. I didn't like a lot of their moves, but they at least do that. Same goes for Inter, even to an extent, Napoli. Same goes for Juve with a Milik. There's so many different things. Okay. Another question here from Rajat. He says, why is Pioli still on the bench? Back in my day, the Derby, he would have been shot into the sun. So what makes Pioli different? Management. Silvio Berlusconi isn't running things anymore. He's not going to get just, you know, he would have fired Pioli far sooner than some of these guys with the way Cardinale likes to do things. And he's talked about this on podcasts at lengths. They're not going to fire him within this season. I personally thought probably should rip the Band-Aid off now, but that's just not the way they do things. So that's really just all it is.
I think it's more so out of a respect for Pioli, maybe his tenure, to finish it off the season. I mean, look, had Milan been free falling and Milan were on the brink of losing a top four spot, maybe the conversation's different. But I think, you know, despite the miserable Derby defeat and how embarrassing it's been and the humiliation that comes with that, I think there is that respect that management has and ownership has for Pioli and the job he's done to say, like, we'll let you finish the season out and we'll kind of give you your marching orders in the summer and we'll get our new coach. And I think that's kind of the approach they've taken, which, I mean, at this point, I mean, I would have been fine with them, to your point, ripping the Band-Aid off and just making this decision to let him go, because what else do we have to lose? But I think at the same time, it's one of those things where, again, it's a respect factor for Pioli and the tenure that he's had at this club to keep him on.
Yeah. And I think too, listen, scoreline's usually a bigger indicator of things on how poorly they gone. So like if it was like a 4-1 scoreline, I think he's gone. But in my opinion, a 2-1 scoreline was very much not indicative of what happened. That was not a close game. They weren't even within the realm of where Inter is. And on top of it, it was just really lifeless. There was terrible selections upon many other things. We'll just get to one more question here. Milan King 07 says, what type of playstyle / setup should be sought after from a new manager in the current squad, and which manager could fit style? So stylistically, tactical wise is what the Milan King is asking about. Listen, style wise, I think it has to be modern. I think you have to adapt to what players you have because you bought these players for a system that Pioli plays. So when you go in the complete opposite direction of that, that would mean more roster turnover because certain players can't play in the style and system that the new manager would require. With that, I think there's still players that can adapt and play in different situations. Like, for example, like a 3-5-2 system can. Is that really great for Milan? No, but you could still do like a fourth, like a three at the back, like
a 3-4-3 or something.
Like there's so many interchangeable things. You're not just married and stuck into those positions. But I think some of the players like Teo could be a great wing back. I think there wouldn't even be a discussion, right? I think Leao could still play wide. Pulisic is very versatile. All these guys are versatile. For me, I think it comes down to personality, and I think it comes down to the type of winning mentality. I think there's three guys at the top of my list personally that I think I would be okay with. And if they surprise us with another name, sure. Those names are, for me, Conte, Conceição, or Thiago Motta. I think anything else after that, I would question. I would be somewhat worried about. I don't think of Vincenzo Italiano. I like Italiano. Am I sure he's ready to join a club like Milan? Not really sure. I don't think it's a great fit for him. I think maybe a club like Napoli would be better off with him. But yeah, just your thoughts on that while we finish up after that.
Yeah, I think that list is pretty fair. I mean, you can remove probably Mota because I think it looks like he's going to Juventus.
We'll see. There's been like some openings that hasn't accelerated that fast. We'll see what happens.
But yeah, I mean, it's interesting too, because, you know, when you have conversations of, you know, you can have your likes and dislikes for pretty much any of the names. You could say Conte, well, he doesn't have a great Champions League record. Okay, but he's got a great domestic record. And then you could say, I like Malta. He hasn't won anything. And that's, you know, you're going to get that from Milan fans, right? He hasn't won any trophies. What has he done? He's only been there. He's only been doing this for a year.
And I made the point to how many times? Tell me what Fabio Capello, Arrigo Sacchi, right. Carlo Ancelotti.
Like at some point, the only way you're going to find that great coach, that next coach, is if it's not Conte, then how did Bologna do it? Like, what did Bayer Leverkusen? How much experience did Xabi Alonso have? I know they're different clubs, but like at some point you have to believe and trust in your management to find the right guy. And how do managers come along? Look at Liverpool. They're not going for – they could easily say, we want a guy who's won trophies. They know that's not that easy. They're going for a new cycle, and they're going for a manager who may not have maybe have won trophies, but they like his philosophy. They like his coaching acumen. They like his background. So I think this is going to be a very extensive approach or extensive search for Milan that is ultimately going to then be narrowed down to two or three guys. And I think Conte is going to be a very challenging one, but – something with Ibrahimovic gives me some hope that maybe Ibrahimovic's presence in there has some sort of pull, because I think that he could kind of see, maybe Conte can see eye to eye with Ibrahimovic. Like, Ibrahimovic is a champion player. He's got a champion mentality. If it was previous management and it was previous directors and maybe Ibrahimovic wasn't there, I could see Conte being like, I don't want to go there. Those guys don't align with my way of doing things. So we'll wait and see. But yeah, I think I agree with your list. I think that ultimately, though, playing with three at the back, if that is a setup that, you know, you're thinking Conte, you're thinking other managers, you got to make sure that you get another strong central defender, because now you need three central defenders.
I think, you know, despite what some people are saying, Lacroix is one from Wolfsburg of a name. But I actually do think, and this is just me and my guess, I think Buongiorno ends up being a Milan player. I do believe that, actually. I think they'll actually try and figure that out. The Xerxes stuff is...
yeah.
I think Xerxes fits within that system.
But I think at the end of the day, the coach is the first thing. Once you know who the coach is going to be, then you could start to kind of get a sense of where the market's headed and what type of profiles, because...
I think it's going to be met with some sales, but I do think... not all is lost. The season sucked. Move on. Find a new manager. Management has a lot of pressure on themselves in the coming 18 months or so. And for the love of God, build a foundation for the stadium. Okay, so that'll put a wrap on this podcast. This was longer than usual. If you hung through the entire podcast, we greatly appreciate you. We know a lot of you do that, especially on the audio side of things. So shout out to all of you. Again, we're winding down on the season here. We're going to be able to try and get these podcasts up as much. There's going to be a lot more different content. We're going to make videos specifically surrounding managers and sort of selections there, and expand our thoughts a little bit more than just the questions we answered today. But again, you can follow me on Twitter at Martino Puccio, and at Martino_Puccio on Instagram, TikTok. If it's not going to get banned, I have no goddamn clue how that's working. And then Matt's stuff is right here. It's been on the ticker at Matt_Santangelo and at AC Milan Bros. And then again, That Milan Podcast, Apple, Spotify, here on YouTube, Martino Puccio. You'll just see the podcast as well. And then the Twitter at That Milan Pod. Any other final notes or a send off, Matt, before we go here?
I got nothing else. The Derby defeat completely depleted me and was so crushing enough. So want to throw it back over to the supporters we have, what we've been doing the entire season. We wanted much more from this season. We haven't gotten it, unfortunately, but thank you to Martino's point for supporting us, liking, subscribing, putting the questions in, consistently sticking with us through the ups and downs of this season. And we look forward to hopefully a strong finish and, putting out more content ahead of what hopefully could be a new and exciting market this summer.
Yep. Thank you guys so much and take care.